From the world's perspective, there are at least two common misconceptions about heaven. One we'll call blissful boredom. Michael Shermer is the founder of the Skeptic Society and editor-in-chief of the magazine Skeptic. He calls himself an atheist. In his best-selling book, Heavens on Earth, The Scientific Search for Afterlife, Immortality, and Utopia, Shermer wonders if there are tennis courts and golf courses in heaven. He explains, in other words, are there any challenges in heaven? If there is no disease, sickness, aging, or death in heaven, if there are no obstacles to overcome and nothing to work for, what is there to do? Forever is a long time to be bored. If the Christian version of heaven is correct, and you get to spend eternity with an omniscient, omnipotent deity who knows and controls everything you do and say, what is it? Christopher Hitchens opines on this topic. He calls himself not an atheist, but an anti-theist, which to me is worse. Hitchens says that heaven will be like a celestial North Korea, from which you'll never be able to escape. A place of endless praise and adoration, limitless self-denial and deprecation of self. Hitchens told an audience in one of his last public speeches shortly before he died in 2011, he says, it will happen to all of us at some point. You get tapped on the shoulder and told that not just the party is over, but the party will continue, but you have to leave. That's the reflection, I think, that upsets people about their demise. All right, then, he says sarcastically, let's pretend the opposite is true. Instead, you'll get tapped on the shoulder and told there's great news. The party is going on forever, and you can never leave. Blissful boredom is the mindset of the world when it comes to heaven. A second misconception I'll call spiritual scales. Michael Bloomberg, the former New York City mayor, was interviewed at his 50th college reunion. And he confessed that he has been sobered by how many of his former classmates have passed away. And at 72, he has begun to realize his mortality. But the author of the interview concluded with these words, but if Bloomberg senses that he may not have as much time left as he would like, he has little doubt about what awaits him on Judgment Day. Pointing to his work on gun safety, obesity, and smoking cessation, Bloomberg said with a grin, I'm telling you that if there is a God, when I get to heaven, I'm not stopping to be interviewed. I'm heading straight in. I've earned my place in heaven. It's not even close. So the idea in the mind of the world is that in heaven there's this divine scale. And if your good works outweigh your bad works, I guess in your own judgment, then you get to go into heaven. If your bad works outweigh your good works, then I guess not. But in their mind, they enter heaven based on their own works and judgment, and then they will sit on a cloud and play some kind of instrument and sing Kumbaya for eternity. Yay, Jesus. No wonder they don't want to go to heaven. But I remind you that these folks are babes in their understanding. Just like 1 Corinthians 13:11 says, when I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child and I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Well, these two misconceptions are childlike thoughts. These people had never grown up spiritually to gain truth and understanding. And so they stand outside the fence and throw rocks at us because of our belief in this glorification or heaven. So this morning, we're going to put aside childish things and we're going to grow up in the Lord in our understanding of heaven. Now, last time I addressed the subject of heaven, we took the first three verses of Revelation 21 and we noted that heaven is going to be a new kind of place. New in terms of different. Not just this old world patched up, but a new kind of place. He also said that heaven was like a bride adorned for her husband. When a bride enters the sanctuary to be wed to the groom, and all of the fanfare is on her, and everyone stands as she enters the sanctuary to be married. When John saw heaven coming down from the sky, it had that kind of celebration to it. And then he said that in heaven, there will be no more sea. Well, we cannot take that literally because we know that the river of God runs through heaven. And as I shared last time, likely John was using the sea as a metaphor. He had been banished to this little isle called Patmos, and there was just a narrow strait of the sea between him and the mainland. And just over the mainland was the city of Ephesus, where John was the pastor for many years. And so most all the people he loved was just across this little strait of sea just on the other side. And John would stand out, it is said, on the edge of the sea and look toward Ephesus and long to join with those he loved. And so when he saw heaven, John saw that people who have died and gone to heaven and love each other are together again. And so he spelled it out in this metaphor that in heaven, that sea of separation is gone and we'll be together again. Well, let's continue on in our understanding of heaven, and you follow with me, if you would, in Revelation 21, verses 10 through 27. Revelation 21, beginning in verse 10. And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain, and he showed me this great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. Her light was like a most precious stone, jasper stone, clear as crystal. She had a great and high wall with 12 gates, 12 angels at the gates, and names written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who talked with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. The city is laid out in a square, its length as great as its breadth, and measured the city with the reed. 12,000 furlongs, its length, breadth, and height are equal. And then he measured its wall, 144 cubits according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. The construction of its wall was jasper. The city was pure gold, like clear glass. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kind of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardius, the seventh chrysolite, eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, and the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls, and each individual gate was one of one pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. But I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city had no need of sun or of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light. And the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor to it. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day, and there shall be no night there. And they shall bring glory and the honor of the nations into it. But there shall by no means enter into it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Now we're going to walk through these passages that will give us a better, deeper understanding of just what heaven will be like. John first addresses the light in heaven. And in verse 10, the term he uses in the Greek language for light indicates that the light of heaven will not be within the city itself. Instead, the light referred to here is probably the aura or the sparkling radiance around the city or encasing the city itself, which is described as jasper stone. So within the city, there is no need for light. Instead, the Lamb will be its light, and around the city will be this sparkling radiance that reflects as clear as crystal. Secondly, then, John addresses the walls of heaven. The city wall is said to have 12 gates, 3 on the east, 3 on the south, 3 on the north, and 3 on the west. So the city of heaven is built like a square, or actually what we'll find out in a minute, it's more like a cube. The New Jerusalem, the city of God, will be constructed in the form of a cube. There's an angel stationed at each one of the gates, and the names of the 12 tribes of Israel are inscribed on the gates. And verse 21 calls the 12 gates the 12 pearls. The city wall is also said to have 12 foundations. Bound on these 12 foundations are the names of the 12 apostles of Jesus. And adorned on these foundations are all kinds of precious stones, all those stones that I mispronounced are on the wall. Thirdly, John talks about the streets in Revelation and or in heaven, and he speaks of the streets as pure gold, like transparent glass. You've probably heard the joke of the wealthy man who had come to his last moments on earth. An angel from God had been sent to take the man into heaven. But he was connected to his wealth to such a degree that he begged the angel that he might be able to take 12 gold bars with him to heaven. And so they argued for a minute, and the angel finally acquiesced. And so the old man got a duffel bag and stuffed gold bars into his duffel bag. Well, when he enters heaven, he's introduced to Peter. Peter talks with him for a moment and then asks him, "What is in that old duffel bag?" And so he opens it up and pulls out all of these gold bars so precious to him on earth. And Peter looks at those and says, "Concrete? Why are you bringing concrete into heaven? The streets of gold. And they will be." John goes on. He speaks about the size and the shape of heaven in Revelation 21, 15 through 18. And what we find in this vision that God gave to John about the New Jerusalem, an angel pulls out a golden reed, and he uses this golden reed to measure the city of the New Jerusalem. And he discovers that the city is laid out in a square or a cube because its length, breadth, and height are exactly the same. They're all equal. The measurement of the city was found to be 12,000 furlongs, or about 1,500 miles. So the New Jerusalem, the city of God, our eternity, is in this form of a perfect cube. It's 1,500 miles wide, its breadth is the same, and its depth is the same, 1,500 miles each way. That gives the surface area of the New Jerusalem 2.25 million square miles. The surface area of the New Jerusalem. One has made this comparison. The city of London, England, is about, inside the city limits, it's about 1 square mile. And in that 1 square mile, about 5,000 people live. So using that as a figure to base on, it's been calculated that the population of the New Jerusalem would be 11 billion people. And that's on the ground floor. It goes up 1,500 miles, which is pretty significant in seeing that the Earth's atmosphere is only about 100 miles. But the real significance of this size and shape of the New Jerusalem, the thing that, man, lights my fire about this, is that there is a similar description of this cube in the temple, in the holiest of holies. The temple had essentially two major parts. It had the temple proper, where people could enter, but then it had the holiest of holies, or the most holy place. And this is what is 20 cubits in the form of a cube. 1 Kings 6:20 tells us that the cube of the most holy place where God dwelt, this was God's home. No person could enter into this most holy place except the high priest, and then only one time of year on the Day of Atonement. In fact, it is said that the people of Israel were so fearful about doing something wrong in the holiest of holies that they would tie a cord around the leg of the priest when he entered on the Day of Atonement. Because if he messed up and God struck him dead, they wouldn't be able to get him out. Because that was God's house. A perfect cube, 20 cubits around. The New Jerusalem is going to be the most holy place in the temple expanded. God has taken His home on earth and expanded it so that we could live there for eternity. A sermon on heaven wouldn't be complete without the things that are missing, the things that won't be there. First of all, he tells us in verse 22 of Revelation 21 that in the New Jerusalem, there will be no temple. There will be a temple in the first heaven, but there will be no temple in the New Jerusalem. We're told that the Lord God and the Lamb will be the temple in the New Jerusalem. Secondly, that there will be no sun nor moon in the New Jerusalem. In verse 23 of Revelation 21, it actually says there will be no need for a sun or a moon, because the glory of God will illuminate it and the sun will be its light. Also, we're told that there will be no security in heaven. No need for people with guns or to guard doors, which makes the comment by Hitchens about heaven being a North Korea lockdown just idiocy. The reason the gates will always stay open and never close, there will be no night, and there will be by no means enter into the New Jerusalem anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Also in heaven, no more pain. Verse 4, the no mores. John tells us what he sees. He says, God will wipe away every tear from our eyes, and there will be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There will be no more pain, because the former things have passed away. Pam and I worked at Buckner Children's Home for 5+ years. We had little girls first, and then we had older boys, and then I directed the recreation there for the entire campus. But one day, I had probably a 14-year-old Vietnamese boy come up to me, and he wanted to talk to me about heaven. He had become a new believer and understanding then that Jesus is the way, the only way. And he said to me, Mr. Funderburg, I don't understand how in heaven there will be no more pain, because my parents are Buddhists. And I know that unless they come to faith in Jesus, they won't be in heaven with me. They'll be in hell. And he said, I can't fathom being in heaven and them in hell and me not being in pain and suffering. It makes sense, except for Isaiah 65:17. For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth. And then listen, and the former things shall not be remembered nor come to mind. No more death. No more sorrow. No more burden. No more pain. Because God has caused all the former things to be passed away, and they will never come to our mind. God will remove every hurt, every guilt, every negative emotion from our minds, because the former things will never come back to our minds. So because of this, I want to encourage you this morning. Whatever it is you may be going through, however deep the trench that you feel like you're in, regardless of what tomorrow may bring, stand strong. We have an eternal destiny that is already secured. You are as much in heaven today. Let me say it again. Your belief in heaven today will be absolutely seen in the days to come. Eternity. 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 through 18. Paul says, therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. Last week, I was in my hometown helping with some family issues. And in doing so, I found a poem that was written by my grandmother. My grandmother died when I was 23. And to this day, it is one of the most difficult things I've ever had to deal with. I loved my grandmother dearly, and she was the only one who was really supportive of me going into the ministry. And I loved her for that. I found this poem that she wrote. It's called My Dream by Marion Funderburg. I dreamed my father came last night. He told me things of heaven. He said the joys that we now know are just a bit of leaven. He said the gates of pearl stand open. There is no darkness of night. That all things are made new, and God's glory is the light. He said no tears are ever shed, no sickness, pain, or death. For happy hearts are filled with song, and there's no need for wealth. The streets, he said, are paved with gold, the tree of life still blooming. And Christ in all of his majesty stands waiting for our coming. My grandmother was a founding member of Bethany Baptist Church in Breckenridge, Texas, and was always the leader spiritually in our family. And when I read that poem the other day, as I was thinking through heaven, it just made me realize again how precious heaven's going to be. Because the people that we love that have gone on before us, they will be there. And you will see them again. This poem and the timing of it all gave me just a renewed sense of joy that's going to happen to me when I leave this planet. And the same will be for you. You bow your heads with me a moment, please. It's possible that this morning you are here and the reality of heaven for you is something that you question, that you doubt, that you fear. You don't have to live that way. You're not supposed to live that way. We can live and should live with absolute full assurance if we have been born again. But if this morning there is a lingering question, I would love to talk with you about it. Maybe clear up some false thoughts, or help usher you into the family of God. For others, you may be really grieving someone that you loved who has been taken, who's died. And the understanding, the realization that when you said goodbye to them on earth, that's just a temporary, I'll see you soon. You will be with them again for eternity in the New Jerusalem. And with that knowledge, we can go forth. So I ask you this morning, do you know that when you die, you're going to heaven? And if you can't answer that in the affirmative for whatever reason, let us help you with that. For any other burden that is heavy on your heart, the burdens of this world cannot be compared to the glory of the kingdom.